The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One-Click Upsell by Zipify Apps. You probably know there's three ways to make more money from your store. You can get more traffic, you can increase the size of the orders you get, or you can increase the number of people that convert on your site. You're probably spending time on traffic, almost certainly. You may have spent time with conversion rate optimization, but when's the last time, honestly, you tried to increase that cart size? Well, One-Click Upsell makes it incredibly easy to offer powerful targeted upsells to your customers. They've generated over $150 million in additional revenue for store owners, just like you. And over 16% of people who get offered an upsell actually take you up on it. It's really powerful. Their entire system is built into Shopify's native checkout, so it's rock solid and secure. And it's built by Ezra Firestone and his team. Ezra, you may know, good friend of mine. He's been in the e-commerce game for a long time. He uses this on his own eight-figure stores. He's in the trenches and he knows it works. So if you want to actually start working on a third of your business that you've been neglecting, increasing that cart size, check them out today at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is sponsored by Klaviyo. If you're working around the clock to build your e-commerce business, you need an e-commerce specific marketing platform that works just as hard as you do. That means you need Klaviyo. With Klaviyo, you'll delight customers and drive revenue at the same time with personalized email and SMS marketing campaigns that you can design and send in minutes without an IT degree. It's by far the most popular email marketing tool in our private community of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners because it's got incredibly advanced and powerful segmentation features that help you make more money. To get started for free, and to learn more, check them out at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping 7-figure-plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today on the show, really excited to be joined by Tal Moore, who's a longtime friend, original founding member of the ECF, the E-Commerce Fuel Private Community. He was at our very first event in Austin, Texas, where we had no idea what we were doing. I think we had like 50 people there at our first event. Really fun. A ton of our members who had been chatting online finally got to meet each other in person. We did all sorts of, it was the first event that our team had put on. So I have memories of going to the grocery store with our community manager at the time and Laura Serino and buying alcohol and beer for a boat cruise and shamelessly bringing case after case of it through the hotel lobby to just these incredulous looks from people at the front desk. Anyway, getting into old ancient histories here, but Tal was there for all of that and since for the whole ride and just a great guy. He started off with a kind of selling gumballs early in his entrepreneurial journey, ended up having gumball.com, building a business around that, sold that business. He's built Franklin's popcorn.com as well as the business we're going to talk about today, which is Guardline Security. And really talking today, focusing about that business, Guardline, that was growing incredibly quickly, thinking about selling, it took a nose dip. And he was in the very difficult position of, do I sell this business for substantially less than I think it's worth because it's on a decline? Or do I buck up and take the time and invest in it to try to right the ship so that I can sell it for a better price? And so we talked through that, how he decided that. We talk about, you know, a lot of the times where he had to walk away from offers that were very tempting, but not quite what he wanted and how, you know, kind of what came out of that. So really, really interesting discussion. He's super transparent with everything, figures, feelings, experience, very candid discussion. So hope you enjoy it. As always, he brings the goods and a great time talking to him. So we'll go ahead and dive right in. Tal, welcome to the show. I'm really excited to have you here because you've been kind of, well, you haven't, but you are one of the original gangsters of our community. You were at, you know, been at all the events except for, I think, one that you had something pop up last minute, and a staple member for some of the most candid and helpful and transparent case studies, especially on the personal side and the forums, and just kind of sharing your experience. You've been incredible about giving talks at ECF Live. You give a great talk, amazing talk this last year about investing that we'll talk about in the episode, as well as helping with the San Diego meetup. So yeah, apart from just being a standout, awesome, fun guy. So thank you for coming on to the podcast, but also for being like, for how much you've given to the community, the whole ECF community over the years. You've been just phenomenal, man. So I can't thank you enough.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the kind words. And I'm really very excited and honored to be a part of this. So thank you.
Yeah. And I think we need to start on a light factor before we dive into all the business stuff. You are recovering from an injury that is has the coolest backstory of one I've heard in a long time. So care to tell the listeners like the kind of the exploits behind what you're in physical therapy for right now?
Yeah, sure. It is on here, but yeah, sure. I'm happy to. So I had a shoulder, I dislocated my shoulder for a second time, and I'm recovering from shoulder surgery and doing physical therapy right now. And this stems from an injury that I suffered from 3 years ago. I was down in Guadalajara, and among other things, we decided to rent do a private tour of a bullfighting arena. And it was ours. We went and we had lunch and we drank tequila and we did a private tour. And then we ended up in the middle of the arena at some point, and more tequila and Coronas came out. This is like now 12:30, and we're hammered and we're doing drinking games, and then out comes the bull, which none of us expected, but we all thought was like the best idea ever at the time. And they give us the red flags, and we're doing bullfighting, and again, in the moment, we just thought this was like the most amazing thing ever. So finally, the bull, I was like towards the middle of the arena, and the bull just was on the outskirts of the arena and just set its sights on me and started doing exactly what you see in the movies, like chart, with the feet and the snout and spit, and charged right at me. And I sobered up really quickly and dropped my red flag, and probably did the one thing you're not supposed to do. But of course, I was not educated or informed. I just turned around and ran, and the bull was going right at me at full speed. There was a barrel in the middle of the arena, and I ran towards the barrel, and I was looking over my shoulder, and the bull is going full speed right at me, gaining on me. I rounded the barrel, and the bull rounded it alongside, right behind me, and then grabbed me and clipped me, threw me up in the air, and I landed on my shoulder, popped right out. I didn't know this at the time. I just got up, adrenaline, rushing my body, and just ran to the outskirts, jumped over the wall, my arm just flailing. And I sat down, I'm just heaving. And a friend, a forum mate, was sitting across from me and looked at me and said, "You don't look so gray, you look green." And I'm just, and then I felt over my shoulder and it was like clear out. And then I passed out apparently and fell on dirt floor. Woke up to a few friends above me Instagramming me. And I said, "All right, get me to a hospital." And so they took me to this like random ER in rural Guadalajara, and they popped it back in. So that was the first time. And then 3 years later, everything was fine. Then 3 years later, I went out and did a surf lesson and caught my first wave and paddled, and it popped right out again. And this time it required surgery. So that's not my finest hour.
Grandpa, tell us again the story of how the bull charged you when you were, I mean, it's potentially questionable at the moment, but it, like I said earlier, it makes for a pretty good story. So, yeah. So I'm excited to talk about, we got a lot of stuff to cover, but kind of diving on the business front, you had this very, I can say interesting from the outside looking in, I'm sure it was an emotional roller coaster, highs, lows, pretty much every emotion between, a period where you grew a business and you kind of had to make some tough decisions about whether to sell a declining business or to try to focus and try to revamp it and sell it on the upswing. And it's a hard decision to make. And so I'm excited to dive into that. And the business we're going to be diving into on the front is one called Guardline Security. Can you give people just a little background, maybe the 60 second version about, I already mentioned at the top what you sell, but yeah, just what it was and where you were at with the business in, 2016, 2017.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it started as a gadget store back in 2002. So it's been in its earliest iteration, it's been around and I've been a part of it. I started it quite a while ago. We had sold a variety of gadgets on the store, but one of the categories was a top selling category was driveway alarms. So I was reselling other brands, other manufacturers' driveway alarms, and then decided to create my own driveway alarm under my own brand, Guardline, around 2014. And so I was selling the Guardline driveway alarm on my website, Guardline Security, and then I started selling on Amazon. Before I knew it, it was a real like thriving business, and it peaked in 2017, 2018, where I think I had topped out around $5.5 million in revenue and about $1.5 million in EBITDA just on that brand and that line of product. So yeah, that's the background of how Guardline got started.
Yeah. And so it tops out about 5 million-ish in revenue and those metrics you mentioned. And so you're thinking about selling the business. Two questions. When did you decide to sell and why did you decide to sell? It had to do with another business that you saw had more opportunity you wanted to focus on, correct?
Yeah. So I'm a serial entrepreneur. I started in e-commerce back in 01. I was very young. I started with gumballs.com, selling gumballs and gumball machines online, and then started a couple of other businesses in quick succession after gumballs.com. So one was a gadget store that I just mentioned. And then another one was a popcorn machine business, which also went through several iterations, but is now called Franklin's Popcorn. Yeah, I just, when I was younger and I grew up quite humbly and grew up quite poor, I just knew that I didn't want to be poor, and I was willing to work hard and do anything I needed to do to make it. And so I was willing to try anything. And so I, you know, as one should do when we're younger, just try a bunch of things. And so I was a very typical serial entrepreneur, just started a bunch of different businesses, and many of them failed and some of them prospered and some of them really prospered. But once I got a little bit older and revenue and income and net worth started to stabilize, then I just realized that not every opportunity is created equal, not just in terms of opportunity, but value and meaning and purpose for myself. And I was just less enamored with electronics and the Guardline brand, and a lot more passionate about my popcorn brand. And so it was a decision. It wasn't a quick decision. It was something that I deliberated, because my Guardline brand was my most successful brand. And it's very difficult. It's a difficult decision to walk away from something that is working in order to buy back my time to focus on something that I'm more passionate about, that's more rewarding and fulfilling to me. But that's ultimately I'm summarizing what, you know, took years to get to, but that's what went into making the decision to ultimately sell Guardline.
Business is doing well, $5.5 million. You decide to sell. What happened in 2019? And correct me if my timing's off, but I think you're at a point where business is peaking and you're also getting ready to sell. And then kind of a wrench got thrown into things.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem with just retail arbitrage is really not having any major competitive edge. So initially, running up to 2017, 2018, my competitive edge was really not much of an edge at all. It was finding a niche product and knowing a thing or two about how to advertise on the Amazon marketplace, which is what I started in 2014, when business was really in a dark place and I was losing money every year. I really decided to throw myself into the Amazon marketplace and really educate myself in that space and what it took to succeed. And I was heads down for 2 years to really understand what it takes to succeed in that marketplace. And so that took me to 2016, and I started to apply my knowledge and know-how on that particular marketplace. And that work started to pay off, and I started to see dramatic increase in the Guardline driveway alarm sales, particularly in that marketplace on Amazon US. And so we were flying high and doing great, but that also attracts eyeballs and attracts attention from competitors. And what started happening was around 2018, late 2018, there was just a flood of competition in the driveway alarm space, like, you know, factory direct manufacturers in China predominantly, who were flooding the marketplace with competing product that had very similar tech to my product at half the cost. And then, you know, as you know, with Amazon, there's just this, like, there's a sales velocity flywheel that occurs. And now all of a sudden, you know, these products were selling, you know, 3-to-1, 4-to-1 to my revenue. And I started losing market share and losing sales and losing positioning in the Amazon search. And so I went from, you know, having this tremendously successful business to a business that was very quickly crashing and burning. And it was a problem. And it put me into a really, really deep despair. I think many entrepreneurs are guilty of this. It doesn't matter how many wins I've had, and my identity is so closely correlated to my business that as my business fails, I too feel like a failure, a tremendous failure. And I felt depressed. I felt very responsible to my team. I promised them success. I promised them a win, and I wanted to deliver on that. And the business was failing. And I thought, God, this is just like, and then I was angry at myself for missing the opportunity and taking too long to decide to sell. You know, I should have sold a year ago when the trailing 12 was a lot stronger, and now my business is crashing and burning. And it was just, it was a really, really horrible place.
And did you decide to sell? Was the decline what made you decide to sell, or had you decided to sell before kind of things started declining and this just complicated the process?
I was kicking around the idea before the decline, but it's profit and success is addicting. And it's very difficult to walk away from a golden goose that's just laying golden eggs. And so I deliberated and I went back and forth, and all of a sudden my market share started slipping very quickly, and it just freaked me out. But I also knew that this was probably a horrible time to sell. So I started putting out feelers, and I talked to Quiet Light about listing it. And I started to engage in a couple of conversations with some, before signing up with a broker, I wanted to have kind of some early discussions with some private equity companies that were doing Amazon roll-ups. I had a chat, informal discussion with Thrasio about what they might offer. And I thought, maybe I can get a number that's good enough that I'll feel comfortable walking away and do it before I sign up and pay a 10% commission to a broker. So I had those early discussions, but as I had feared, the drop in the trailing 12 really hurt me, and they gave me an offer that was just unattractive. I decided it was too far apart from what I was willing to sell. At that point, in my mind, my number was 1.8 million. Which would have been, a little bit less than a 2x multiple of the trailing 12 EBITDA, which was still a low number, but a high enough number that I was willing to take. And so they were just too far apart. I mean, they offered me a number that was lower, and then they wanted a credit for a $200,000 credit for inventory, which put the net sale at like 1.4 million. And it was just too far apart. I mean, I was tempted, and I was thinking about it because it's still a significant number. And I didn't know what was going to happen with the business. Like, it could be, if I waited, long enough, it could get worse and worse. It was just too far apart. And I said no, and I just felt terrible. I was in despair. I was depressed. I talked to Dave about it, my number two. I was embarrassed, and I was angry at myself, and I felt like the walls were caving in, and I was just really upset with myself. And I had to regroup, and I had to take a deep breath, and I had to come up with a new plan. I needed a plan. And I think that a plan is really, really important, particularly when you're in your darkest of days, because a plan is what gives you hope, and hope is what gives you empowerment, and then empowerment is what leads to action. And that's exactly what I did. I set out a plan, and I started to execute on it, and so.
Hey, it's Andrew here with a quick aside, and you obviously love e-commerce, you're interested in that. And so I wanted to make sure you're aware of the private community we have at E-Commerce Fuel for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brand owners. And it's something we've been building for close to a decade now, with over 1,100 members across the globe. And our secret sauce, like the name implies, is that everyone inside has deep experience doing this with an owner mindset. And so what does that mean? It means when you log onto our form, you get fast, on-point answers to your most pressing questions, regardless of whether that's you're negotiating a new lease for a warehouse, or maybe you're negotiating with UPS or USPS or FedEx about shipping rates or pickup times, or potentially you're just looking to find a great outsourcer, or wondering if you can even outsource your content. Is that something anyone has had success with? You can tap into this huge knowledge and brain trust across the globe and get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes. So it's an incredibly active forum with experienced people. You get to plug into an amazing network worldwide. A lot of our members, when they travel, if they touch down in Dallas or Sydney or London or Bozeman, Montana or whatever it is. Oftentimes they'll reach out to other ECF members, you know, obviously a little harder to do potentially right now, but and see if, you know, they want to get together for a beer to connect and just, and oftentimes get to know a new friend. So it's an amazing network, as well as invites to our member only events like ECF Live, which is our annual summit gathering for about 200 people. And then finally, the intelligence in our community just that's shared helps you avoid making really costly hiring and software mistakes. So our members write reviews on what they're using, their software tools, their agencies, completely unbiased, completely from their own experience. And so you can avoid making that, you know, hiring that agency that's an absolute nightmare, but you don't know about it. Or you can hone in on the one that actually does a really good job. It saves you a ton of time and money from bad hiring and software decisions. So if any of this sounds interesting, head on over to ecommercefuel.com and you can learn more about the community, what's included, and apply for membership as well. All right, let's go ahead and jump back in to the discussion. Can I ask you a quick question? So what, I mean, you mentioned that, again, I can't remember if it was just now or in the past, but you were very, very tempted by that lowball offer. It was, you know, within a couple $100,000, you said if they would have bumped it up, you would have taken it, which still would have probably been much lower than you'd hoped, but between how the business was doing and how rough you were personally in terms of just where you were mentally, like, you would have taken it. What? And I think this is a great little, yeah. I'm sure lots of other entrepreneurs have gone through this or will go through this listening. So how did you, I think one of the biggest things people can take from kind of your experience, I'm hoping, is that, like, how do you think about whether to whether to sell the business or double down and reinvest in it? Because that was, it's a really hard call to make. So for you, what was it that gave you the conviction? And as we'll find out here, spoiler alert, it worked out well, but what gave you the conviction to say no, despite how you were feeling personally, despite how the business was doing, and turn around and invest back in the business? How did you think through that?
Yeah. I mean, first off, there's no 100% right answer, and it's not black and white. Like, this is a very, very difficult decision. And all I can say is that I've done this long enough where I have a high trust in my own gut. And I knew that the business was hobbled, but I also knew that even in its roughest of shape, it was worth more than what they were offering. And I wasn't in a desperate place. Sometimes you can fall into a mental state of desperation, and that's a very dangerous and slippery place to be. And it's okay to you can still make a decision, but not coming from a place of desperation. It's just not a good mental mindset. And I found that I was slipping into that. And that was a good sign to pull back and say, okay, well, wait a minute. Let's take a step back. Let's take a deep breath. You do not need to sell this right now. And there is value here. Like, the value part of my entrepreneurial brain knew there was more value here than what they were offering, and that I could do a few things to ensure that that value was realized. And I didn't think that I was too far off. So it was really just a gut sense. Would it have been wrong to sell at that point? I mean, based on what, you know, and I'm happy to get into it, what I ultimately sold it for and what we did to turn it around before we did sell it, it from a dollars and cents point, yes, it would have been. But, you know, I mean, you just don't know what the right, you know, you have to kind of take, you know, you have to analyze your landscape and where you're at in life and what your goals are, what your time value is as well, because everything, there's also a value to the time spent in deliberating and working, and time spent that you're, you know, that time spent on one thing means time not spent on something else. So there's a value proposition there that also needs to be taken into consideration. But I was pretty damn clear at that moment that it was not the right move for me. I didn't like where I was coming from energetically. I didn't like how hobbled the business was. And to sell at that point based on a very low multiple just didn't make sense to me. And it didn't feel right. And I ultimately trusted my gut. And it was the right decision.
Yeah. And feel free to talk about this as much as you feel comfortable or not, but how did, you know, I think if any business offer you get, it also has to be looked at in the light of where you are financially, right? Like if somebody has an offer on the table that is going to get them to their number where, you know, they can really focus on what their priorities are, whether that's starting another business, whether that's spending more time with family or helping or whatever that is, like, even if it's not how much you think you, maybe the business is worth, I think you make a fair argument for you know, not trying to, you know, for locking that in, especially if you have a real clear idea of where you want to be and just, you know, and moving on. Because like you said, like you never, you don't know what the future holds. And sometimes, you know, you can have a story like yours, but also sometimes, you know, it's a lot harder to write the ship than you think. And so from your perspective, how much did that play into that in terms of thinking through that in terms of how it would change your life or not?
It's huge. Yeah. I mean, you really have to, you know, it's a deeply and highly personal and circumstantial decision. And so if it was a different set of circumstances, if I had all of my, you know, nearly all of my net worth in this business, and I had dependents and I had debt, you know, depending if my circumstance was different, then it may have been a different outcome. I mean, you know, getting north of $1 million for anything, that's a real number. And that's a life-changing number. And I think that had I been younger and, you know, if my net worth was less, I mean, I've had a series of wins and I've also owned this business a long time and I've been able to extract a lot of cash out of it. So I wasn't in a financially desperate decision to sell, but under a different set of circumstances, I may have been more compelled to, and that may have been the right decision. That may be the right decision for a person depending on their circumstances. In my case, I didn't need the money and I got angry. You know, like I got angry. I was angry at myself and I was angry at the offer. And I was, you know, angry that I was in this situation. I was like, damn it. Like I'm going to do something. I'm not walking away. Like I'm not going down like this with this business. It would be, this does not feel right. And I'm going to start taking action. I'm going to turn this thing around. And that's what we did. We started to, you know, we just did a complete 180, you know, it pulled back. And started focusing on, okay, what do we have control over? What kind of levers can we pull to turn this thing around? And so we focused in a number of arenas. Like number one, branding. I mean, we started this actually 6 months prior, but like a refresh of the website, a refresh of the brand, a refresh of all of the artwork, so that there was a through line no matter where anybody saw our ads on Facebook, on Google, on our website, on Amazon, that there was a clear like through line artistically and from a design perspective. So we leveled up the professionalism of the brand. I let go of really crappy contractors that were running my Google and Amazon ads. And I reached out to my community and I got best in class suggestions on contractors, fired the old guys that have been doing, you know, this for years and really not helping the brand, and bringing in young, fresh perspective and really getting after it and turning that around. We had a version 2.0 in the works for like a year and a half. So double down on that and really focused on coming up with a plan and executing on bringing the version 2.0, creating a bright future for the brand and creating a new version that really would set itself apart in terms of feature set and IP. We focused a lot more on micro and nano influencers. I hired a marketing genius on Clarity. It was $1,000 an hour, $800 an hour call. And I spent an hour with this guy, you know, going over ideas and thoughts and strategy and coming up with a strategy to focus on an army of nano and micro influencers to talk about my product. And this is a security product, right? And so the idea, and it was a high-end security product. So there's a higher consideration phase because my product is selling for $150, $180. So they might get the initial top of funnel exposure, but then they wouldn't be an impulse purchase. They're going to go around and, you know, a prospective customer is going to go around and research and answer questions. And there's a longer consideration phase. And I wanted to ensure that no matter where a prospective customer went, anywhere on the World Wide Web, they were going to come across an army of passionate buyers of Guardline to say, you would be a fool to consider any other brand other than Guardline when it comes to your home security.
And on that call, you know, it's a lot of people I think would look at that and say, you spent $1,000 for an hour call. It's crazy. But was the value, and I think I know the answer to this, but what do you feel like the value received or the ROI on that call was?
10x what I paid, 100x for two reasons. Number one, just getting the blocking and tackling kind of ideas on what to do. But more importantly is, like I said, it gave me a plan. It gave me hope. It empowered me to get focused and to have you know, to get focused on a future and to get, it's so important to have that level of hope and to have a plan. Whenever we're stuck and we're in this dark place and the world's just spinning, you just have to stop and talk to smart people and get inspired and come up with a plan. And that is invaluable. And so, and you get that from smart people. It's why it's so important to surround yourself with smart, capable people that are 10x smarter than you. You get that inspiration, and that's invaluable.
And of course, the contents of a plan are immensely important from an outcome standpoint. Obviously, you want to get the right information. But listening to someone this week, a psychologist, I can't remember who it was, but they were talking about something along the lines of like, stress is really the things in your life that are problems that you are not working to actively fix. And even if, again, the plan is super important, but so much of your stress is relieved if you have a problem that you are actively either have a plan or you're working towards, because your mind, you've got something that you're using to advance that or fight that. So, which I thought was interesting in terms of thinking about stress and even apart from efficacy, just how you deal with it in your own mind.
Taking action is imperative.
Yeah. And so you get in a great mind space, you're working on influencer marketing, you're rebranding, you're doing all this kind of stuff. And the business started to do better. What did that transition period look like? Like, how long did it take to start coming back? And what were the drivers for starting to right the ship and kind of fight some of the, you know, the hordes of Amazon sellers that were undercutting you?
So we started, this is at the end of 2019, and then beginning, so January 2020, things started to turn around on Amazon. Now, you know, through our creative and our elevated branding, we were giving people a reason why, we were giving buyers a reason to buy something that's going to cost double than what all of the Chinese competitors were offering for. I mean, this is an elevated, and there was a perception of quality and accuracy when it came to our security product that was different than, we're an American company, American tech support. This is what we eat, live, sleep, and breathe is Guardline Security. And so we started to see a turnaround in sales on Amazon. And then March 2020, COVID hits. And as everybody knows, awful time, the world came to a stop. There was just a moment, like, you know, those first like few weeks in March where everybody was just holding our collective breath, wondering like, what on earth is happening? Like everything just stood still. And then, you know, as many people in e-commerce can attest to, e-commerce sales, particularly in certain sectors, just started flying. You know, people are at home and they're scared, unfortunately, and they're, you know, we're in lockdown and people are shopping online for goods and services for their home. And security was impacted very positively due to COVID, and people were at home, people were scared, and security was top of mind. And our business 4x, like within, by from April to, sorry, from March to April, it 3x, and then April to May, you know, went up again. And so we just went, and fortunately for us, we had actually overshot inventory the previous year. So we were sitting on like a year's worth of inventory, which again, I thought was the biggest screw up ever. We were just like totally off on our numbers, but it ended up being a blessing in disguise because then there was major supply chain issues and we were sitting pretty. So while other people were running out of, our competitors were running out of product and we had everything. So then we just went full throttle. And we started pumping up Facebook ads. We went from $1,000 a day and spend to $5,000 a day. You know, with a four to five x ROAS, and it just blew up. And so now we were empowered. You know, and then at that point we had listed, and we listed with Quiet Light, and Thrasio ended up coming back and negotiated, and we got full ask.
Yeah, and you mentioned, I mean, in the very beginning, you walked away when you got the low ball, and even in the final stages of what ended up being the purchase, I think Thrasio came back and offered you something that you walked away. I think you wanted full price. They came back and said, oh, business looks better. We'll give you a little more. But they still, you know, didn't meet your number and you walked away. And it's just the power of, I mean, you probably walked away two or three times ultimately, and it served you incredibly well. It's just the power of not feeling like you have to sell it. It had a huge impact on what you ended up getting paid.
Yeah, very, very important. And it's important to not like BS your way through that. Like you need to genuinely find a place of power and contentedness so that you can be very genuine. I mean, look, I was having very, very respectful but candid conversations with them, and I genuinely didn't need them. I didn't need to sell. I genuinely didn't need to sell. This wasn't like I was putting up some sort of a front. Like our future was bright and it was getting brighter by the day. And that's ultimately the best place to be when you're looking to sell, is you want to need less than the other guy, you know, and they wanted the sale more than I needed to walk away at any sort of discount. And I refused to, you know, and the number initially was 2.4 and they deliberated and went back and 2.3 and they deliberated and went back and forth. And then, you know, I told Quietlight to raise the price by another 100,000, and we will continue to raise the price every month relative to the increase in the trailing 12. And so we raised the price to 2.4 and then they came back and offered full price. And so it was, you know, so that was a $1 million swing from what they had offered 6 months prior. Plus we had profited about $700,000 during that, from the time, from the beginning of the year to the time that we closed. So about a $1.7 million swing from the initial offer to what we ended up closing for.
And I liked something you did as well. They came back, and before the price was going to go up, I think they came back to you and said, like, hey, we'll come in at that, you know, 2.5 or 2.6, whatever it was. And if you agree to honor that price and not raise it, given the business is doing really well. And you said, great, okay, I'm in. But works the other way too. Like, you guys can't come in and beat me down on a bunch of stuff in due diligence, which I thought was fairly shrewd, because it's not uncommon for that to happen. And you ended up closing at the original price. I don't know because of that, but it was definitely a nice little thing to have in your pocket.
Yeah, no, I made it very clear before we actually signed the LOI, because once an LOI is signed, like, you need to honor your word. But yeah, no, you hear horror stories of people getting retraded, you know, during the LOA process. And I made it abundantly clear to them that we'll go in and we'll agree to these terms, but I'm not lowering the price by a dollar. And so you either take it or leave it. You know, if you try to I will not retrade. And they were honorable. And I will say they were actually a really, really awesome company to sell to. Very professional. They kept their word. Everybody I dealt with on their team was, you know, just incredibly professional, very smart. And it was a relative walk in the park, the closing process.
As much as selling a business can be.
Yes. Yeah. It was hell. I mean, it's hell.
Yeah. Kind of unrelated question as we're capping this off, though. Would you ever start or build a consumer electronics product company again? I've had chatted with a handful of people this year, and no. And it's a just hard no.
Yeah. Hard no. Yeah. No, I'm not into electronics myself. You know, I'm a bit of a Luddite. There's just so much I can go wrong. And, you know, if you're selling an electronic, in my case, you know, the only time I heard from my customers is if something went wrong, and I hate that. I hate that feeling. I'd rather sell something that just, like, delivers joy to people. Yeah, there's just, I'm just not into it, you know. And it's also, there isn't like a high opportunity for like repeat sales on this product. You have to come out with like additional products. I have zero interest in selling and getting back into consumer electronics.
Yeah. Speaking of joy, Franklin's Popcorn. Is it franklinspopcorn.com it is, right?
Yes.
Yep. Yeah. Franklinspopcorn.com meets, you're talking about the things, no joy, no repeat customers. You were kind enough to send us, you've got this really great, delicious popcorn, but on top of that, it's like the old, at least the stuff that we got was the old style, kind of like put on the stovetop, spin it. And my kids, like I said, it's amazing. It's really good, but they just had so much fun with the process of doing it. And just like, when you said joy, it made me think of them making your popcorn on our stove, because they love it. They love normal popcorn and they just freak out when we do yours. It's a really cool product.
Thank you. Yeah, I love the video you shot of them. It was great. It warmed my heart.
Hey, Andrew here. We aren't done with the discussion, or I'm not done with the discussion with Tal, but we're going to go ahead and take a break for this week. We're going to finish up part two with my conversation with him next week. We're going to talk about, among other things, his three very ironclad rules for investing to see exceptional returns. So hope you enjoyed this week, and stay tuned for part two with Tal next week. Thanks so much for listening. And the fact that you made it to the end of the episode tells me you're probably someone interested in this stuff and might be a really good fit for the e-commerce fuel community. Our community is the world's largest group of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners and offers a value-packed forum, dynamic live events, and much more. If that sounds interesting at all, you should learn about membership and how to apply at ecommercefuel.com. Big thank you to our two sponsors. Supercharge your email marketing efforts with Klaviyo, the world's best email and SMS marketing engine, at klaviyo.com/ECF. and also one-click upsell from Zipify apps, where you can rapidly increase your average order value by offering powerful targeted upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Finally, thanks to Sherelle Torrecampo for helping produce the show. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.